You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on America Out Loud. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. We got lots to talk about today, and we got a very interesting guest. So before we even get started, though, I want to mention one thing. I would love for you to support the Wounded Blue, the national assistance and support organization for injured and disabled law enforcement officers. Go to www.thewoundedblue.org and donate if you can. And also, you've got to go to Amazon.com and look at our film, The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. You'll be shocked at how the men and women of law enforcement, once they are injured or disabled, are treated by the very cities, counties, and states where they have sacrificed so much. Now, let's take a walk into the briefing room where I'm going to give you my view from the blue. Lots of stuff to talk about this week. Let's start off with one of my favorite subjects, and that is Marilyn Mosby. She's one of my favorites. She's always entertaining to talk about. She is, in case you don't know, the state's attorney, the elected state's attorney for Baltimore. Now, that means that she's the prosecutor. Now, she has embarrassed herself time after time after time. She has revealed herself to be an activist first and a prosecutor second. One of the ways she did that was when she grandstanded after the death of Freddie Gray and charged six Baltimore police officers for his death. She made a big political statement about how this was her time and the time of the people against the police. Well, it didn't work out so well for her because, everybody got found not guilty. And then she was sued for malicious prosecution, which unfortunately she beat only because she has immunity from lawsuit. So she can do whatever the hell she wants and doesn't have to face any consequences. Well, she's at it again. She's showing exactly what her true agenda is. But she was once again defeated when the prosecutor's office planned to vacate 5,000 convictions for marijuana possession and sales. So what in January, she announced that she just stopped prosecuting. Now, it's still illegal there, okay? But she just made up that she's not prosecuting. That's it. And this is how she said it. I'm announcing a monumental shift in public policy as it relates to marijuana possession in the city of Baltimore. Effective immediately, the Baltimore City State's Attorney's Office will no longer prosecute marijuana possession cases regardless of weight and or criminal history. So in other words, you can have a bale of marijuana, and of course, which is for sale, and you can have numerous arrests for the same thing, but she's not going to prosecute. Beautiful, huh? Well, then she went on to say that she was ordering the that 5,000 convictions be overturned. 5,000 convictions. So what happened? The judges, when she made that decision to do that, they said, not going to happen. You're not going to get this done. And so she was handed once again another defeat. So once again, she shows her true agendas. And secondly, she shows her own incompetence and the fact that she is worthless as a prosecutor. While we're talking about prosecutors, there must be something in the water. You know, one of the things that really upsets law enforcement officers for a very good reason is when the very people who have taken an oath and been elected by the people to protect them by being prosecutors abdicate that responsibility. So Mosby is a perfect example. She's an activist first and a prosecutor second. Well, now it's happening in Pennsylvania as well. The Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner, who is as anti-law enforcement as they come, has now announced he won't prosecute people for driving while high. You heard me right. So he'll prosecute people for drunk driving, but he's not going to prosecute people for driving while high. How people can actually get their head around this, I don't understand. So he's the district attorney. He is charged with protecting people through his office. Instead, he makes this announcement. Now, he's, believe me, this guy is a bonehead, and he's been up to and including charging people for lesser offenses than murder. Okay, they kill people, they murder people, but he finds a way to charge them with a lesser included offense because he doesn't want to overcharge. So we already know what this guy's agenda is. First thing he did when he got elected was fired half of the office who didn't agree with him philosophically. And this is what is amazing. The Philadelphia District Attorney, I'm going to just read this, has announced that his office will no longer prosecute cannabis driving under the influence offenses. The District Attorney's Association is completely at odds with him over that. But he just, he said, no, I'm not going to do it. He says, Pennsylvania has had the dumbest law on DUI for cannabis for a very long time. So in other words, it's not bad enough that we got a bunch of DUIs driving on the road and you can only catch a fraction of them. Now when law enforcement stops a car, guy's smoking dope in the car, he's all high, and this district attorney wants the officer just to let him go and do nothing because he won't prosecute him. You know, it's madness. It is district attorneys like this all over the country who are basically mitigating the laws for their own political and personal agendas. How many people are going to die because of people driving under the influence? And of course, now there is absolutely no impetus not to, because there's no consequences for it. So once again, another district attorney abdicating his responsibility. He and Mosby are cut from the same cloth. They should probably create their own organization, district attorneys who don't give a damn about their communities. Okay, so let's talk about this must be district attorney bashing day, because there's another case I want to tell you about, and this out of Texas, Caldwell County, Texas. A Caldwell County deputy was heralded as a hero after being shot in the line of duty. But a year later, the prosecutor dropped the charges against the people who shot him and blamed the incident on the deputy instead. So the incident occurred shortly after midnight in 2018 when Caldwell County Sheriff's Deputy Jay Johnson responded to a call about the theft of a tool chest. And the victim told the deputy that he suspected his neighbor, with who he had an ongoing dispute, had stolen the tools. So the deputy headed over to the property. And this is the property of the woman's name is Kimberly Moore, but it doesn't really matter. And he went on foot because it's adjoining the neighbor's property. So he walked through a gate, up the driveway to the house. And as he's walking up, he hears a woman call out, "I hope you're ready to die." And then he felt a pain in his shoulder and he realized he'd been shot. So the Kimberly Moore and her 33-year-old boyfriend told police they thought it was the angry neighbor coming to get him and they were just defending themselves. And the district attorney sided with him. He said, well, if the deputy didn't pull up with his red lights on, how are they supposed to know that he was a cop? Well, wait a minute. Before you shoot somebody, aren't you supposed to, maybe know who they are? What kind of decision is this? The deputy gets shot. Let me ask you something. What kind of ridiculous move would it be for a deputy or a police officer to drive into a subject's driveway with their red lights on and announce their presence in such a way that it would draw that much attention to them and make them a target. Nobody. That's not the way it's done. The proper way is as stealthily as possible, where you, as the officer, have the advantage of seeing what's going on and getting a lay of the land, if you will, before you go knocking on the door. That's just solid policing. So now this deputy who gets shot simply for doing his job gets maligned by the district attorney and blamed for his own shooting because he didn't come in with his red lights on. It's absolutely incredible. This district attorney nonsense. And here's the thing. There isn't any accountability. These district attorneys or prosecutors do what the hell they want, and there's no accountability for it. You can't just say, hey, you know what? You're a bonehead, and we're going to remove you from office, because unless it's a criminal offense, the government will not remove an elected official. So they can do as much damage as they want for their years that they're there, usually a four-year term. In fact, here's another one. King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg has said his office won't prosecute assaults on police officers that result from resisting arrest. What the hell is this? King County, Washington. Of course, yeah, you figure it's near Seattle, right? So, you know, law enforcement officers in King County feel like the prosecutor just declared open season on him after his office announced it would no longer prosecute assaults on officers that would result from the suspect resisting arrest. What? So this case arose out of a woman was being arrested. She was resisting arrest by trying to pull away and not allowing her hands to be handcuffed. Well, then she kicked the officer in the family jewels. Yeah, kicked him. And so she was charged with resisting and assault. This is normal. I mean, if you commit an assault against a police officer, shouldn't there be accountability? Shouldn't there be consequences? This district attorney, for some boneheaded reason, has decided that he's not going to prosecute for assaulting an officer if they're resisting arrest. That makes about as much sense to me. I mean, I don't get it. I cannot understand what the thinking is. Now, the sheriff up there, the sheriff came out and just lambasted him. Well, and she did so in a very nice, professional way. But she made her feelings known publicly. And as a result, now, this has embarrassed this idiot prosecutor, this district attorney, Dan Satterberg. And now he's trying to explain it away. He sounds like a bigger moron because now he's trying to justify it and saying, oh, no, I didn't really mean that. Yeah, he did mean that. And he dropped the charges on this woman who kicked this police officer. So, once again, how many district attorney stories were there this week? This is a bunch. And, of course, this is symptomatic of what's happening all over the country. Now, you know, here's the thing. If law enforcement officers don't believe that their own district attorneys are going to follow the laws, all that does is lead to more depolicing and resentment and less public safety. And you're going to hear a lot about this from my guest who's in the interview room today, because she is a district attorney and she's fed up as well. So you got to stand by and listen to this interview because it's pretty wild. Now, here's I'm not going to say it's good news, but at least a little justice. A 17-year-old was found guilty of murder when in Maryland after he ran over a police officer, Baltimore County police officer, Amy Caprio. And this 17-year-old had tried to play on the sympathy and play the race card and the youth card, et cetera, that he was just an innocent, you know, guy and he got scared when he ran over the police officer. He was committing to, he was the driver, he was the getaway driver in a car with a bunch of other punks who were burglarizing houses. And when Amy Caprio arrived, she ordered him to get out of the car. Instead, he ran her over. And it's heartbreaking because you actually hear her dying on her body cam. It's just heart-wrenching. So his lawyer tried to portray him just an innocent child. Well, turned out he was a career criminal at age of 17. Should never have been out of juvenile. But because of the criminal injustice system there, he was basically allowed to go and wander the streets, even though he was had committed serious crimes, was wearing an ankle bracelet that didn't work. And it just shows you how broken this system is. At least he was found guilty, and hopefully we'll never see the light of day. That's about all the time we have for the briefing room. And this was my view from the blue. Stand by and listen to this incredible interview. I want to tell you guys about a pretty amazing product. It's called Arrest My Vest Spray. And really what it's designed to do is when you are wearing a ballistic vest, you know, it gets sweaty, it gets hot, it gets drenched, from working out in the street. And sometimes it doesn't smell all that well. And this is an amazing product that takes that odor away. And you don't even have to use it just for the vest. It takes pet odors away. It's great for your vest. It's great for your dog bed. Everything else that you need a deodorizer for, this stuff is amazing. Check it out. It's at stinkyvest.com. Go to stinkyvest.com and check out Arrest My Vest Spray and arrest the odors. I want to tell you about a company called Law Enforcement Specialists. If you are an active duty law enforcement officer and you're looking to work extra jobs like security and traffic jobs, these are the people you need to go through. We all know that working extra jobs is what gives us the extras, gives us that little extra payment that we need, or perhaps gives us the opportunity to take our families out to dinner a little more often. And the only way to do it is to be working extra jobs. So what they do is they're all over America. I think they're in everything but a couple of states. And they work with your organization, your administration, and find off-duty jobs to work. You got to check them out. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com. That's offdutypoliceofficers.com. And register with them, contact them. Now, if you have security needs, this is the company you want to go through as well. If you are looking for both security or traffic jobs, if you have a company that requires that, you want to contact these folks as well. They're good people. They're based in Arizona, but they have police officers and services all over the country. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
I have a very special guest with me in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. Name is Michelle Hannessy. She is the president of the Association of Deputy District Attorneys in the state of California. She has been a prosecutor for over 20 years, and she is not afraid to tell her side of the story about what's going on in California. Thank you so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, Michelle.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So I was reading the article that you wrote, and I'm going to read the headline to my listeners because it certainly got my attention. Newsom supports killers, rapists, and torturers over victims and their survivors. Wow, that is a hell of a title of an article.
I don't know what else I could say that would be the truth.
It's unusual to see the truth about political figures come out so eloquently. So I appreciate that. Now, tell me, what was the impetus for writing this article?
Well, the impetus, of course, was Governor Newsom's outrageous moratorium on the death penalty, on all death penalty and executions in the entire state, which he did after promising the voters in tape-recorded interviews that although he doesn't believe in the death penalty, he would nevertheless enforce the law of the state that the voters have now multiple times voted on and decided that they wanted to keep.
So, you know, I guess we at this point should never be surprised by what elected officials do. But he literally took office just this year, and it didn't take him long to show that what his true agenda was, now did it?
No, not at all. I mean, I don't think it was a huge secret. He just lied about it when publicly asked. We knew what his agenda was on the Second Amendment. That was very clear. And he made it clear that he didn't support the death penalty, but he said he would enforce it. And then he did this 180 saying, well, the voters voted for me, so they must want me to do whatever I think is the right thing to do, which is absolutely outrageous.
It absolutely is outrageous. I mean, the voters have spoken, and for him to basically use his position of power to arbitrarily make a decision that is based on his personal and political agenda against the will of the voters. Now, let me ask you this. I mean, voters don't have a very long memory. Do you think that since he just took office recently, that he's just figuring, you know what, by the time I'm running again, this won't even be a thought in people's minds?
You know, it's hard to know what he's thinking, and I like to call him Emperor Newsom because he seems to think that he is entitled to do anything he wants, irrespective of what the actual laws are. But the voters do have a long memory, and even the governor should not consider himself immune to the will of the voters.
You know, I've, as a commentator and about law enforcement issues, the state of California is constantly on my radar. I mean, I don't think that there's been one broadcast that I have done on either this show or my television show on Ops Lens TV that doesn't talk about issues in California. I mean, it seems like it's the crazy state when anything involving law enforcement.
Well, it is, and we're used to it here. But the fact of the matter is, our present legislature cares far, far more about the rights of criminals than they do about the rights of victims, and they seem to forget the victims altogether.
You know what I find so disturbing about that is that, remember, I mean, you've been in this business for a long, long time. Remember when victims' rights was on everybody's lips when, you know, there was such a push for victims' rights because they were the forgotten people, and that was the political football of the day. Now it seems like nobody cares about victims' rights.
The public cares. and those of us in law enforcement care deeply. It's our lawmakers in Sacramento who've forgotten about the victims. There's a lot of people out there still fighting, not the least of whom is Mark Class, whose daughter Polly Class was, you know, the impetus for one of the biggest victims' rights bills out there, a lot of which rolled into the California Constitution.
So there are policies and laws on the books concerning victims' rights, but, I mean, when was the last time you ever heard a politician even bring that subject up?
Never. They literally do not seem to care about victims, and it's shocking. It's though crimes were committed in a void and there are no victims, and we just need to stop punishing the poor criminals because it's not their fault. Even what we call property crimes, quote, nonviolent property crimes, really affect people. If your home gets burglarized, even if you're not present, people feel very violated, and it really disrupts their sense of security and their very psyche. It's a very intrusive crime, even though it's, quote, just a property crime.
Well, yeah, that's a perfect segue into where I'd like to take this conversation, and that is, you know, in 2014, the Proposition 47 took effect. And Proposition 47, in my opinion, is one of the worst pieces of legislation I have ever seen. And it was literally rammed down the voters' throats under a cloak of secrecy and propaganda. You know, it was basically Proposition 47 was sold as a cost-saving measure. But what's been the reality of Proposition 47?
Well, the reality has been that thefts are no longer priorable. I mean, that's one of the big results. Another huge result, of course, is the failure. Now we're not collecting DNA for a lot of crimes, and DNA solves crimes and it exonerates the innocent. So we reduced our ability to collect DNA. We reduced the ability of peace officers to make arrests for thefts at businesses and thefts under $950. So it's not just the reduction in sentence, it's the change in the ability of peace officers to make arrests that have really changed what we're seeing out in the public, out anecdotally, which is that thieves now feel free to walk into a store with a calculator, steal less than $950, and walk out the door. Security's not going to stop them because it would be usually a violation of the business policy to engage in any kind of use of force. It's too great a liability for the employer. And police officers who show up after the fact can't even make an arrest because they didn't witness the crime.
It's basically become a misdemeanor crime not committed in the officer's presence. So therefore, they can't even make an arrest. This is madness. It's insane.
Well, it is madness, although I'll give you, I wouldn't necessarily vote for 47 is one of the worst pieces to come out of Sacramento when you have 57 following closely on its heels.
Oh, okay. Well, before we go on to 57, let's talk about 47. Just one. I want to explain to the listener that Proposition 47 is strictly a California law, but we're going to take this conversation into a little bit wider area. Proposition 47 basically eliminated a number of crimes from being crimes, just wiped them off the books, or downgraded them to the point where law enforcement basically has no arrest powers. And so the quality of life, I mean, you're talking about businesses that simply cannot sustain the losses that they're taking. So it actually affects the business community, and then it affects the citizens as well. I mean, what's happened is people just don't even report crime anymore.
Well, that's exactly what's happening, including the business owners, and it's really hurt business, small business owners and large businesses, because there's no incentive for them to even call the police. It's just a waste of their time when the police can't make an arrest. And the real problem with 47 is not that it changed the value for petty theft, that raised the value from $450 to $950. The real problem is that it stopped making those crimes felonies when you had prior convictions. So in the past, someone who had repeated petty theft arrests could be arrested and charged with the felony. And that was a different arrest power for the police. They could arrest someone who had prior convictions. And you disincentivized repeated thefts. This took away that disincentive. So now someone can commit theft after theft every single day of the week. And as long as it's under $950, the police have almost no power to arrest them. If they do get arrested, they're going to get booked and released the same day, and they're facing almost zero consequences in court.
So not only does that make law enforcement basically impotent for fighting crime, it also tells the citizen that, you know, the government isn't going to help you at all. So don't even bother reporting. And I wonder if this has increased the citizens' vigilantism. Has that been an issue at all?
I don't know if you're seeing any vigilantism. I mean, you have seen some unfortunate incidents. I know there was one security guard at a grocery store in Los Angeles County who was killed when he tried to stop someone from leaving the store without paying for a, you know, 12-pack of beer. But you see a lot of chit-chat on the community websites like Nextdoor that they are informing each other of burglaries, of break-ins, of suspicious persons. So they have become more vigilant, if you will, just not necessarily vigilantes.
I just can't help but think that this is a societal issue that is not getting the play that it should get when it comes down to media attention. I mean, you don't see any articles, hardly at all, bringing this to the attention of the public.
Not very many, but the media, the print media, tends to be pretty liberal. There's been a lot of coverage on our local radio here in Los Angeles of these issues, but the print media, like, I won't even name the major newspaper in Los Angeles County, doesn't support the victims' right agenda, so they don't really cover these stories.
So let's move on to tell us about Proposition 57, and I mean, you kind of took me by surprise when you said it's even worse than 47.
Oh, it absolutely is. It was atrociously written. It was jammed down the voters' throat at the last minute. It was a last-minute amendment to what was supposed to be a law relating only to juvenile criminal law that completely changed the release rules for adult criminals who were incarcerated. And it purported to only grant early release, quote, that's what it's supposed to do, clear out the prisons and grant early release to, quote, nonviolent offenders. The problem is it never defined who was a nonviolent offender. It was so poorly written. And those of us opposing it pointed this out vociferously, loudly, frequently, prior to its enactment, and there was no effort made to amend the language at all. And what we ended up with was a bill that predictably, and we did predict it, allows sex offenders and sexual registrants to be granted early release, to allow third strikers to be granted early release, to allow incredibly violent people who have violent criminal histories be granted early release based upon their present offense only. And it's incredibly flawed legislation, but it got passed. And now we're seeing the result, which is that violent individuals are being released. People who've committed stabbings, beatings, sex offenses are eligible for early release under this law. And it's been happening.
And when these offenders get out, of course, they reoffend within a short period of time. Then people are outraged at how could this guy be out of jail? And then who bears the brunt of the bad publicity for that? It's the DA's office and the police.
Well, it should be on the office of the governor, because it was our former governor, Jerry Brown, who supported 57 and refused to acknowledge its flaws, even when he had an opportunity to correct those flaws. And now we're stuck with it. And hopefully we'll be able to change it in the 2020 election. A group of law enforcement professionals got together and wrote some legislation that would fix some of the most egregious flaws of Proposition 47 and Proposition 57. It is called the Reducing Crime and Keeping California Safe Initiative, and it will be on the 2020 ballot.
Well, let's hope that it gets as much publicity and support to get that word out as the other agendas did. So, I mean, literally, 47 and 57 had propaganda. It was basically a propaganda machine in power that put out all this misinformation, and you know, low information voters think they're voting for one thing, and in reality, it's the shell game, basically. In fact, I understand. I just read the other day that the politicians, Shirley Weber is one of them, received the Golden Fleece Award for Proposition 47. Golden Fleece Award being, of course, the tongue-in-cheek award for politicians who pass pieces of legislation that are ridiculously expensive and basically lied to the public to get it on. So I thought that was kind of funny that they got the Golden Fleece Award for that beauty.
Well, I'm glad she's getting recognized for her work with victims' rights in that manner. Well, you know, all of these the one thing they all have in common is they throw the word safe or safety in the name of the initiative. One of them was the Safe Schools Act, and you read the actual language, and there's nothing whatsoever in there that relates to schools in any way.
it's pretty, you know, I guess I shouldn't say shocking because nothing is shocking any longer. I want to veer off this topic for a moment. You know, as the president of the Association of Deputy District Attorneys, you work with DAs from all over the state of California. You know, I want to talk about the Stephon Clark investigation that resulted in the exoneration of the officers up in Northern California after the shooting of Stephon Clark. You know, as a result of that shooting, there has been a tremendous amount of misinformation and propaganda about law enforcement use of force. And I know that this is something that your office has to deal with all the time. You know, there's now been some, you know, there are going to be some law changes that will tremendously affect the street officers. You know, how do you see this playing out as these, you know, basically, Stephon Clark is being portrayed as an innocent young man who was gunned down by the racist police. And this is, you know, a la Ferguson. We keep on seeing this time after time. How do you, as an association president dealing with these situations, how do you handle this?
Well, it makes it very hard for prosecutors when faced with what ultimately amounts to public lynch mobs calling for prosecution of anyone, no matter who it is, based upon what they hear in the news media, because that is not an accurate or complete representation of the facts of any case. And that's how I see these groups who are calling for charges to be brought against anyone. Usually we're talking about police officers in these cases, based upon public sentiment. And we have jury instructions that tell jurors, you are not to make decisions based on pity, prejudice, or public sentiment. That is not the way we do things. All of the offices of prosecutors across the state have charging standards that they must live with. We can't charge people with crimes based upon public outcry. That would be completely immoral and unethical, and no good prosecutor would do that. And in the Stephon Clark case, you know, the district attorney in that county did what many other district attorneys have had to deal with in similar instances, is they did a very thorough investigation and thorough analysis and determined that in those circumstances there was no criminal liability of the police officers, and the attorney general concurred with that opinion. So you have two separate law enforcement agencies doing an analysis and determining that there's no criminal liability. Meanwhile, the public is calling for blood, and they want to see any police officer, prosecuted for something to satisfy their sense of justice based upon what they see in the news media rather than an analysis of the true facts of the case.
Exactly. And unfortunately, this is like the siren song for politicians. They get they get juiced up from this kind of rhetoric, and then start enacting laws. I mean, right now there has been an effort on behalf of. Of course, Shirley Weber, once again, her name keeps on popping up in everything regarding anti-law enforcement and anti-public safety. Now she's leading the charge, trying to pass a law that would make it easier to prosecute police officers when they use deadly force. I mean, it's mind-boggling that they have the power to do this and seem absolutely drunk on that power at the expense of law enforcement.
They do. Well, they somehow now perceive law enforcement as the enemy to be attacked. And I'm really concerned about what this holds for the future of California when you vilify law enforcement and make law enforcement the enemy. No one's going to want to do that job. They're not going to want to do that job, and they're not going to do that job. And that's what's really going to result in chaos in this state if we keep going down this road, because no one will want the job except the people least qualified to do it, and that only exacerbates the problem that our legislatures think that they're trying to solve.
Exactly, we're seeing law enforcement across the board, a huge diminishment of recruitment, a huge diminishment of retention, and a lowering of hiring standards, which, as you said, all that does is feed into the narrative, because when you then hire people who shouldn't be hired as cops, they make, it's like the self-fulfilling prophecy. And all it does is it snowballs. But all right, so I want to talk about another topic. I mean, literally, you and I could talk about law enforcement topics for hours, but so we don't have that much time, but I want to ask you about this. Proposition 14 was enacted by the state legislature to basically put forth a political agenda of emptying out the jails, not putting people in jail. It's all the you know, the political correctness of, you know, poverty doesn't make someone a bad person. They're just stealing because they don't have any money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. No consequences for their action, no accountability. That's the state legislature that does that. We're seeing around the country, and this is what I want your opinion, we're seeing people becoming elected to district attorneys' offices and county prosecutors who, once they take office, enact their own miniature Proposition 47s by refusing to prosecute cases for all kinds of crimes. This is a trend that seems to be going on in America. As the president of the Association of Deputy District Attorneys, how does that affect you, and what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think it's more than a trend. It's an absolutely concerted effort by various PACs, many of whom are getting money from George Soros, including here in California, what's called the Real Justice PAC. It is their agenda to put money behind district attorney candidates to get rid of incumbents and put people in office that are typically have backgrounds as defense attorneys or ACLU lawyers, who are basically more supportive of the criminal side of the system than the victim side of the system. And it's a very real agenda that they have. It is shocking to me, and we all, when we get sworn as prosecutors, you take an oath, and you take an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States, the Constitution of the state of California, and the laws of the state of California. So how you can take an oath to become a district attorney of a county and take that oath to uphold the laws and then turn around and disregard them is shocking. And I question whether they're committing perjury, frankly, when they take that oath.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that was a question that I have. And that is, okay, you are the prosecutor, and you fail to prosecute, and you actually change the game. Isn't there some type of ethical area here that they are in essence are violating? And can't they be held accountable? I mean, is there no one that holds these these people accountable for their actions? Is there no body to do that?
The only time that I've seen any accountability is, I think it was a Florida district attorney who announced that she was not seeking death in any case when there was a particular case in front of her that was eligible for the death penalty in that state. And the attorney general took the prosecution away from the district attorney's office. And the attorney general, even here in California, is lawfully empowered to do that. So that's the only accountability I can see other than that person getting voted out of office. And the question becomes is the district attorney failing to enforce the law unethical? And that's an interesting question because district attorneys do have a huge amount of discretion in charging crimes, but they are supposed to uphold the law. So there's a fine line to be tread there. You know, we have policies in Los Angeles, for example, in the Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office. It is one of the policies of the office not to necessarily seek prosecutions against people who steal food to eat, you know.
Sure.
There's this basic sort of concept that if you're stealing for pure survival to sustain yourself, we're going to give you a pass on that. So are we not enforcing the law? Yes, but there is some discretion to do that. Now, to blanketly disregard an entire law that's, you know, been enacted through our legislative process, through a democratic process, it starts to become questionable. So it's the accountability is either, will the attorney general take your cases away from you, or will the voters vote you out of office if they don't like the way that you're making decisions?
If this is a great philosophical discussion that we could talk about for a long, long time. You know, and some of these district attorneys, they hide their agendas. But others, I mean, like in Boston, Rollins got elected, and she, even before she got elected, she put on her website, if you elect me, I am not going to prosecute, and I mean, there was a litany of crimes, including possession with intent to distribute drugs, resisting arrest, malicious destruction of private property, all kinds of stuff. And I guess my question, or my thought, is, are the voters so dumb that they could see what her agenda is and voted it in anyway? And then the question is, well, are they getting the criminal justice system that they've asked for?
Well, that's what I always say. You get the government you demand. And the problem is it takes time for our voters to actually educate themselves. That's where the failing is in these propositions that we've had in California, like 47 and 57, is you have a three-sentence summary and a title that says safety, safety, and they think it's a good thing, and they don't have the time as an average consumer or citizen, nor are they equipped to read the actual language and know what it means within the context of the law. And that's the problem with these other prosecutors running is, you know, they say it sounds like the one that you discussed was fairly public in her stance and what she intended to do. But if they are less than transparent and, you know, put on a good show and look clean and speak well and articulate, you know, how is the voter supposed to know the difference?
Exactly. Exactly. This is a trend that is happening across America. I find it worrisome as a citizen. I find it extremely worrisome as a law enforcement officer, because what this does is it undermines the entire criminal justice system. And who is the most visible part of the criminal justice system? And that is the uniformed officer. So this has very, very unforeseen consequences, or maybe they aren't so unforeseen in the eyes of those who are literally perpetuating this basically social activist movement within district attorneys.
Well, I think the consequences are foreseeable to those of us in the law enforcement system. But the problem is we're not going to pay the price. It's going to be the citizens, the voters who pay the price by being victimized, by being subject to acts of violence. And I'm sorry to say that sometimes that's what it takes to wake up the voters and get them to really pay attention, because we've seen this cyclical thing happening before in the past, and the pendulum swings to the left and the pendulum swings to the right, and it has to get pretty far one way or the other to really get the voters to pay attention.
Exactly. Well, we've run out of time, I'm afraid, and this has been a phenomenal discussion, very, very enlightening. My guest today is Michelle Hannison, president of the Association of Deputy District Attorneys in California. And I really want to thank you for taking the time and joining me here in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
End of Watch with Randy Sutton.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we memorialize the men and women of the law enforcement profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice and given their lives in the line of duty. Last week, I had the pleasure of reading no names. This week, I have the duty to read four. The first is Special Agent in Charge of the United States Army Criminal Investigations Division, Leo Kahn. Special Agent Leo Kahn suffered a fatal heart attack while participating in the agency's physical fitness test at the United States Military Academy in West Point, New York. He was transported to Keller Army Community Hospital, where he was pronounced dead. Special Agent Kahn had served with the United States Army Criminal Investigation Division for 15 years and was assigned as the Special Agent in Charge at the United States Military Academy. He is survived by his wife. Special Agent in Charge, Leo Kahn, United States Army Criminal Investigation Division, End of Watch, Tuesday, April 30th, 2019. The second is Police Officer Jordan Harris Sheldon of the Mooresville Police Department in North Carolina. Police Officer Jordan Sheldon was shot and killed while conducting a traffic stop on West Plaza Drive at 10 p.m. He was transported to a local hospital where he succumbed to his wounds. The subject who shot him fled the scene and committed suicide in a nearby apartment. Officer Sheldon has served with the Mooresville Police Department for 6 years. Police Officer Jordan Harris Sheldon, Mooresville Police Department, North Carolina, End of Watch, Saturday, May 4th, 2019. The third officer whose name it's my duty to read is Police Officer Robert McKeithen of the Biloxi Police Department in Mississippi. Police Officer Robert McKeithen was shot and killed in the Lopez Cuave Public Safety Center's parking lot at 170 Porter Avenue at about 10 p.m. A male subject walked up to him and shot him multiple times without any provocation. The man fled but was subsequently arrested. Officer McKeithen was transported to a nearby hospital where he succumbed to his wounds. Officer McKeithen was a U.S. Air Force veteran. He had served with the Biloxi Police Department for 24 years and was planning on retiring by the end of the year. He is survived by his wife, daughter, stepdaughter, and two stepsons. Police Officer Robert McKeithen, Biloxi Police Department, Mississippi. End of Watch, Sunday, May 5th, 2019. Last police officer whose name it's my duty to read, Trooper Matthew Gotti of the Tennessee Highway Patrol, Tennessee. Trooper Matthew Gotti was killed when his patrol car collided with two tractor trailers on I-40 near mile marker 74 in Madison County. The incident occurred at approximately 3:45 p.m. as Trooper Gotti was responding to a car fire. His patrol car struck the rear of one semi before spinning into the second one. Trooper Gotti had served with the Tennessee Highway Patrol for just 11 months. Trooper Matthew Gotti, Tennessee Highway Patrol, Tennessee. End of Watch, Monday, May 6th, 2019. Each of these men gave their lives in the line of duty. May they rest in peace. I want to thank you guys for tuning in to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I appreciate you taking the time. You can please find me on Facebook at the voice of American law enforcement. If you are a Twitterer, follow me at LT Randy Sutton. And always support the Wounded Blue, thewoundedblue.org. Our organization is the assistance and support organization for injured and disabled law enforcement officers. If you are a police officer, either active duty or retired, and you are suffering from what you think may be some stress-related issues, you can feel free to contact us there as well, because we have a fantastic peer advocate support team all made up of active duty and retired former officers who have been injured and disabled in the line of duty. TheWoundedBlue.org. Never forgotten, never alone. Thanks again for joining us. We'll see you next week.